today, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, the 2019 draft review edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Jacob Morley. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob Morley. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how the heck are you, man?
I'm great, brother. I'm doing well. Seems like things have slowed down a little bit, you know, with North Dakota State, Kansas State, the Packers, just fewer live games to deal with and analyze, and the balance struck between, you know, the NDSU basketball that I have to cover and draft prep is a more family friendly balance. That's it's closer to a 50-60 hour work week than it is a 80-90 hour work week, which was something that when all three football teams were rolling was tough.
Dude, I hear you. Yeah. And draft work it's just a different beast. And I'm glad we're in draft season. You know, draft season's fun because everyone once again is 0-0. Super Bowl was last week, but that's over and done with. Now we are all looking forward to what our teams can potentially do to make themselves the team holding the trophy at the end of the year. And so we're going to look today at what the Packers did in 2019 and how those rookies looked their 2019 season and then project them moving forward. So what I'll do is at PackerReport.com a couple weeks ago, I actually wrote a rookie report card. So I'll be sharing some of that information as well and just kind of the grades that I put on these picks after 1 year. And the angle I wrote this article was strictly just grading their rookie year, not even looking to the future, just strictly where they were picked, how they performed, what kind of grade I'd put on that. So we'll look at that. But on this podcast, we'll be a little bit more optimistic with some of these picks and kind of look at what we think these guys can do moving forward. So Ross, I'll give you the floor. I'll tell you the pick. I want to hear your thoughts first, but I'll tell you the pick. I'll tell you where they were drafted overall, and I'll give you a baseline of their stats, including how many snaps they played. So obviously first round pick, Rashawn Gary, edge out of Michigan, 12th overall, played 297 snaps this year with 15 tackles, 3 sacks, total pressures, 16. Mind you, that is Pro Football Focus's stats. So their sack numbers are a little bit different. They don't do half sacks. So that's why that seems a little bit higher. But Ross, we are 1 year into the Rashawn Gary project. How are you feeling about that pick?
Kind of similar to how I felt when they made it. It wasn't the best pick that they could have made. I feel like a lot of us that were, you know, not crazy about Gary were justified in being that way. It's not, everybody says, oh, well, hindsight's 20/20. Well, it's not hindsight when, you know, the Packers big board had him in the high 20s. And that obviously being a Packers specific big board that had basically the quarterbacks removed and Green Bay's draft needs up higher than other positions, and still Gary was, you know, a little bit down the way. So it's not, in my opinion, hindsight to say they should have taken Brian Burns when I said originally, you know, that they should have taken Brian Burns, or that they should have taken, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, or maybe Andre Dillard, somebody, Marquise Hollywood Brown or DK Metcalf at a different position. But Gary is exactly what I figured Gary was going to be, and that is a 100% a project. And he was able to create pressure, was not able to finish a ton of sacks, but ultimately was, you know, right where you kind of figured a guy like Rashawn Gary would be through year one, and somebody that they haven't quite figured out where to play him. I don't think he's great with his, you know, hand up. I don't think he's an excellent 2-point stance guy. If it were me, I would play Gary almost exclusively at the 3-tech. And if that means he needs to put on 10 pounds, that's fine. I don't, not going to bother me any. Kind of a high pick for a 3-technique, but ultimately I'm just concerned about his long-term development outside. Now, you know, I'll say what I said when they took him. He has the chance to be a perennial all-pro just in the sense of he's one of the greatest athletes in the history of the NFL, flat out. I mean, just flat out athleticism, raw testing numbers for a 6'4", 275-pound man. He does things that other guys just can't do. So then you have to put it on Mike Smith to get him there, and you have to put it on Mike Pettine to get him there. And, you know, he is every bit the project that we thought he would be. Now, would he be further along if the Packers didn't sign both Smiths? Maybe. And that's a tough thing in the sense of, well, is it the chicken or the egg? Did the Smiths play a crazy high percentage of the snaps because Gary wasn't ready, or did they not play Gary because the Smiths played a crazy high percentage of the snaps and Pettine just wanted to roll with his stars?
And there's a thought process out there, and I think Mike Smith even touched on this, because this pick was very much driven by Mike Smith, and he even, and if you don't know who we're talking about, he's the basically the
edge coach, player. Outside linebackers yeah. coach.
And so he, you know, there's stories of him running up and down, you know, the halls of Lambeau Field for pumping his fist when Rashawn Gary was picked. And he even spoke, you know, glowingly of him as this year went on and went as far as to say something like, you know, when Rashawn Gary is the best pass rusher in this league, it'll make more sense, something along those lines. But he also talked about how they probably wouldn't have taken him if they didn't sign the Smiths, which I thought that seemed, it's kind of interesting to look at it that way, but it kind of makes sense because it kind of tells you the Packers knew exactly what they were taking when they took him. And that is basically, like you said, like one of the best athletes to ever come through this process. And Gary, like you said, is that. But he's just a unrefined ball of clay right now. And quite frankly, if the three Smiths, Mike, Za'Darius, and Preston, can't get him to play to his potential, I'm not sure if there's anyone in the league that could. So I think he's in a good spot moving forward. But glowing reports from coaches really only get you so far in this league. I mean, Gary's got to produce. And a lot of people will point out that this is the highest pick the Packers had in a decade. They just have not had top 15 picks. And so that's where I think a lot of the, you know, the gnashing of teeth came from with Packers fans when, you know, Rashawn Gary was the pick. And I remember just being surprised more than anything. Which I shouldn't have been, because you go back and I actually did last year, I did a little exercise where I looked at the types of players that Mike Pettine run defenses have typically selected. And I came up with the criteria of like 7 things, and it was, you know, height, length, explosive jumps or something like that. And Rashawn Gary had hit on all 7 of them. So it really shouldn't have been that much of a surprise. It just was kind of one of those things where it's like, is this actually accurate? But it proved out that it kind of was. But like you said, he's got to perform. He's got to develop. He's got to be better to justify this pick. That absolutely can happen. We've seen it happen time in and time out. It's not like he didn't do anything all year. And you look at his snap count, 297 snaps is not very much. That's very little. And to get 16 total pressures out of 300 snaps is actually not god awful. That's not terrible. Could it be better? Of course. But for a rookie still kind of figuring out how to play that, you know, that stand up edge, I think there is promise there. There is reason to believe that he can get better and he will get better. But for the 2019 season, and grades are dumb. Like, don't get me wrong, grades are stupid. So if you want to call me dumb for giving it a grade, that's fine. I totally get it. But for the article I wrote, I gave this pick actually a D- for its first year. It's kind of because of how high the pick was and what type of production you're getting out of the 12th overall pick. So in the grand, and mind you, that is just 2019. When your 12th overall pick on, plays less than 300 snaps, I don't know how you can give that a passing grade. But that doesn't mean I'm not excited for Gary's future, because I think he can absolutely, like Mike Smith said, I think he's got the tools. He's got everything in his toolbox that you could possibly want from a pass rusher. So he can get there, but 2019, the haters are out, and they have a little bit of a case. So moving on, that's Rashawn
Gary. Well, right. And so, like, I just want to quick touch on that. And I know I talk a lot, so quick might be, you know, not that quick, but the snaps thing bugs me just a little bit, because it's so dependent on, does your position rotate? Like, what if they had taken Dillard and Bulaga and Bakhtiari just don't get hurt? You know, what if they took a quarterback? You know, that's why I struggle a little bit with the evaluation of Gary, because is it Pettine that refused to sub out Smith and Smith, or is it Gary that just wasn't that good? Now, I think you can almost assume that it was Gary, but at the same time, you are assuming, and I struggle with that a bit. I'm not sure I know what the answer is.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying. I think I would probably give it a similar grade if it was Dillard and he didn't play, just because my whole thing is they just haven't had a pick that high, and you want immediate value. And I'm trying to look up, because I think I want to say, this is off the top of my head, I can find it real quick, but I want to say Fackrell probably played twice as many snaps as Gary did this year.
Sure.
Which goes into that as well. But sure, like I get that. I get that argument. And that is that's the total argument behind what this year. It's going to be not a very valid argument, but it's something that I've even poked the bear with a little bit of the, what if they take a quarterback in the first round? Probably won't. Probably less than 1% chance of that happening. But I think you'd have to give it a similar grade after 1 year. What would you give Aaron Rodgers after his first 3 years? If you're going strictly just off of what he did on the field, you know, it's tough. But that's kind of where I'm coming from with Gary. Now, if you want to talk about his future prospects and what I think he can do moving forward, and just looking at the pick as a whole, in the grand scheme of things, I think I'd probably just go with an even C, just an average grade, you know, it's still kind of a wait and see, or even, I mean, like I led with too. Grades are dumb. They really kind of are, because we really just don't know. But if I had to give him a grade, that's what I gave him. So moving on though to the second first round pick, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Darnell Savage, because I know you're not quite as high on him as, not that you're not high on him, but not as high on him as a lot of Packers Twitter might be. So Darnell Savage, so he was the 21st overall pick. He played 1,095 snaps, 59 tackles, 5 total pressures, 2 passes broken up, and 2 interceptions. So 1 year in, 21st overall pick, Darnell Savage. What are your thoughts?
You know, like you said, I'm not where some folks are on him. Just ready to, you know, I don't know if anoint him is the right word, but I'm just not there. I hope, you know, that he's good, but in the same sense, I don't know that he's that much better than, you know, rookie. I don't know that he was that much better than the rookie version of HaHa Clinton Dix. I don't know. I know he wasn't as good as the rookie version of Nick Collins. I'll tell you that right now. You compare their 2 rookie years. I just wasn't that impressed by the kid. Now, what I was impressed with were, you know, the things that can be worked on, the things can be molded. And I've actually become even a little bit more bullish on Savage in talking to my buddy Arif Hassan, who is with The Athletic, covers the Minnesota Vikings, and, you know, obviously covered defensive backs coach Jerry Gray for a number of years. And you look at Minnesota, you've got, you bring that snap total down to, I'm just going by strictly Pro Football Focus grades. If you bring the snap threshold down to 20%, so 20% of the team snaps, Minnesota had three of the best four safeties in the league from a grading perspective. Now, is Pro Football Focus the gospel? It is not, but they do have compensated football professionals evaluating every single game that aren't Vikings fans or aren't fans of this team or that team or whatever. And so for Anthony Harris to be number two, Harrison Smith to be number three, and Jayron Kearse to be number four, that has to be really, really pleasing in the potential development of Darnell Savage. If you guys are wondering where Darnell came in, if the minimum snap is 20%, this does allow some lower snap safeties who just played really well in limited action. It does allow some of them to be, part of the discussion, but he was 47th. There are, obviously 64 starting safeties in the league. So that it's an average number two safety, but you don't trade up to the mid-20s to take an average number two safety. They want him to be a star, and I think that Jerry Gray can be a big, big part of that. Adrian Amos tied for 17th in overall Pro Football Focus grade, which, again, not the be-all, end-all, but the kid just has plenty of upside. You talk just coverage numbers, only the coverage grade, and he jumps right into the top 32. He jumps right into that safety one area. So if you're not worried about tackling or blitzing or run support, he's already great. But it's just a lot of things that I think Jerry Gray can work with him on, because the number one thing that I think lacked with his play was just consistency. And that's so big on the safety side of things. It's exactly what makes Adrian Amos such a great player. But Darnell showed so many flashes of superstardom that I think if they get a chance to get him to make those plays every other week instead of every 4 weeks, it's going to make a huge, huge difference in the level of star that he can be.
Yeah. And one thing, so I'm kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum than you, because I love Darnell Savage coming out, and he kind of, good and bad, he kind of showed me what I thought he would be. And what's interesting about him is I'm looking at his total snap count right now on Pro Football Focus. And so he, the majority of his snaps came at free safety, 485 snaps. But then you look at the closest was 230 in the slot as a slot corner. And so that's what I like about him. And I think it's even you that kind of put this idea in my head of kind of using him in that honey badger type role where you can, maybe next year or the year after when he gets more comfortable playing at the NFL level and he's seen more, truthfully, he can play, anywhere. He can play in the slot. He can play deep. He can play in the box and be just a matchup type guy. I think in the first 4 weeks, you kind of saw a really good indication of who he can be. Then, he got hurt in that fifth week, missed two weeks, and I'm not sure if he ever really recovered. Because it seemed like in those first 4 weeks he was, he was making a play a game, and it kind of was what you were seeing in training camp, where you heard that's kind of what you heard from there too, is he was making a play about every day. And I love his speed, I love his tenacity. I think he can be that type of player, that Buda Baker type of player, that Honey Badger type of player. Will he be? I don't know, but that's where I think his potential lies. And I think the other thing that my big concern with him coming out of Maryland was his size and his ability to hold up throughout a 16 game season. And so that's not a great sign that he suffered that lower leg injury in week 5. And it looks kind of like he was a little bit dinged up throughout the majority of the season because of that. But even so, he was a Pro Football Writers Association All Rookie Team selection. So, my criteria for just his 2019 grade, strictly speaking, in this draft class, when you are on the all rookie team, it's hard for me to give that selection anything other than an A when we're looking just at 2019. Because I think the other guys that were on that all rookie team were Juan Thornhill and then Gardner Johnson from the Saints as well. And I know you brought up an interesting point. I think it was actually, I don't know when it was, but I thought it was, it's good to revisit it when you talked about safety play in the NFL is something that we've seen rookies come in and be able to play at a really high level. And so there's two guys that have now you've mentioned that have kind of been on my head. And one of them was Marcus Williams, the Saints rookie, or he's not a rookie anymore, but when he was, and then Clinton Dix today, who both probably had similar rookie years, which were similar to Darnell Savage's, where you'd say that he was good. He was fine. If he stayed just like this, he would probably be an average starting safety in the NFL. But you look at HaHa and you look at Marcus Williams and you see how Clinton Dix has kind of his trajectory has kind of gone up and then down. And then Marcus Williams in his second year, I think he was a top five rated safety in the NFL. So there is still room for improvement at that position that you hope that, you know, Savage can make in his second year and beyond. So right now, after 1 year, like I said, I'd give that pick an A, but I'm kind of in the Darnell Savage fanboy club. So, Ross, I'm not going to ask you to put a grade on him because you don't have to, but, it seems like we are a little bit apart on that. I know you like Savage, but, I can definitely see where some of that could have been coming from. Moving on to the Packers' next pick, round two, really kind of the darling of this draft class was Elgton Jenkins, center, actually guard center type of guy out of Mississippi State, second round pick, 44th overall, 1,160 snaps, zero sacks allowed, one quarterback hit. Bizarre. That's wild. I kind of forgot about that stat. Ross, give me your thoughts. And we've talked about him quite a bit on this pod, but refresh us on your thoughts on the Elgton Jenkins pick.
I struggle with it just in the sense of what it could have been. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal player. Guard is not the replacement level position it used to be. You know, people really didn't seem to care about guards, you know. But if it were me, and again, this is not hindsight, this is reality. If it were me, I would have taken either Greedy Williams, or AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, or Juan Thornhill, frankly. But they already had Darnell Savage, obviously. But yeah, you know, I would have taken either Greedy or one of the receivers, then, and I still would have done it now. You know, I still believe in those guys, and you know, AJ Brown, obviously, well, both, frankly, all those guys proved me pretty right as far as the Packers big board rankings go. Although I don't know enough about what went on in Cleveland to tell you how people felt about Greedy's first year. Like I said, I truly don't know, but putting all that aside, putting who they could have taken aside, you have to feel good about the Jenkins pick. They have a top, probably, I would say, 10 to 12 pass blocking guard in the league right now. And he's probably, as far as starters are concerned, he's probably a bottom 15 or 20 run blocker in the league. But I described him, and I can't remember what it was. I'm putting out so much content these days. I described him as the, I described him as the David Bakhtiari of guards, in the sense that when Bach got to Green Bay, he was, tremendously valuable because the second he got into the lineup, he could pass block. And there is no greater trait for an offensive lineman than the ability to keep your quarterback clean. Run blocking is almost a bonus plan. He then developed a complete game. He developed the ability to move people. He developed the ability to get out in space and bury defensive backs on some of those tackle pull designs. He developed the functional strength to not be, you know, kind of, because early in his career, to be honest with you, early in his career when they ran left, it was terrifying. I mean, he was bad. He was flat out bad when they ran left earlier in his career. And now I think you feel a lot better about his potential to fill out and become a guard that can maybe in maybe not next year, but maybe the year after that, not only can he shut people down inside, but he can move people a little bit.
Yeah. And that's, I think that was a question I asked for you on the mailbag this last week was, you know, who are some guys that you expect to make a jump and who are guys that you hope can make a jump? And Elton was a guy that I said, I expect him to make a jump in his year two. And someone asked me, like, well, how can you say a guy that was as good as Elton was his rookie year, how could you really expect him to make that big of a jump? And that, and you hit the answer right on the head there. He's really not that good of a run blocker. Yes, zero sacks allowed, one quarterback a hit allowed is a fantastic stat. He's already an elite pass protector from the guard position in the NFL, but he has a ton of room to grow as far as a run blocker. So if he can round out his game, kind of like D-Bock has, that left side of the line for Green Bay is in really good hands for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future. What you're saying about the other picks is 100% right. I think you take a stud wide receiver, a stud corner, even a stud safety over a stud guard. It's just kind of how, where it falls in the pecking order. Now, does that mean Elton Jenkins was a bad pick? Of course not. He's a very, very good young player. And to be successful in the NFL, you have to draft good young players, regardless of what position they play. So I say this pick, when you cancel out all the noise, all the stuff, the what could have they done, all that stuff, I think you have to say he, to me, he's an A-plus as far as a pick. But that is not including, would I have rather have A.J. Brown? Yeah, I would. But Elton Jenkins is a Packer, and he's going to be a Packer for a long time, and I think he's going to be a very good Packer for a long time. So moving on to their...
We might want to pick up the pace a little bit.
Yes, or else we're going to be here all night. But yeah, moving on to the third round pick, and this is a guy that I was really excited about when they picked him, and that is Jay Sternberger, the tight end out of Texas A&M. I lost my train of thought here on what I was looking at. But here we go. So 75th overall pick, third round, 162 snaps, three receptions, 15 yards, one touchdown. That is playoffs included, which without those playoffs games, you probably aren't as excited about Jay Sternberger. But Ross, he's kind of become the offseason darling for this Packers offense, the guy that Packers fans seem to want to put a lot of stock in, taking a year two jump and making this offense, or taking this offense to another level. But what are your year one thoughts on the Jay Sternberger?
Yeah, so I kind of want to, and I just said let's pick up the pace, but I kind of want to get into this. And I want to start by saying I understand that there's, you know, very little chance, frankly, that Jace is going to hear this. But earlier in the season, I had said that expectations for Sternberger should be extremely low. And the tweet got passed around a little bit. I got narc tagged and Jace liked the tweet. You know, he liked that I said that expectations should be really low. And by no means is this, and I told you so, that's not at all the point. Nobody gives a shit what I think. It's the point though, is that it was not to disrespect him. It was to try and keep things at least a little bit realistic. You know, Jace ends up, even if you count the playoffs, he ends up with three catches for 15 yards and a touchdown. And that's just kind of life for a rookie, man. And that's life for a rookie tight end, not only a rookie tight end, but one that started the year on the pup. These guys just don't come in and tear up the league at that position. It's a very difficult position to physically be ready to play, because you got to be strong enough to mess around with defensive ends and 3-4 outside linebackers while still being fast enough and savvy enough in your craft to be able to separate from linebackers and safeties and nickelbacks. And it's just hard, man. You look at like a Jimmy Graham, first year in the league, played every game, had 31 catches and 350 yards. You know, that's it. No more than that. And it goes on, frankly, throughout all of those, big time tight ends. Gronk, first year, 42 catches, 540 yards. Sophomore year, 1,327 yards and 17 scores. Is that going to happen with every big time tight end? No. But it does happen. You look at Jermichael Finley, 2008, 14 games, 12 targets, 6 catches, 74 yards. The next year, he is one of the best tight ends in football, 676 yards, 5 touchdowns, and absolutely torches the playoffs. And what I'm trying to say here is just that was not a shot at Jace. And I think in general, this stuff needs to be, it needs to be kept in mind when thinking and talking about Jace Sternberger. Is not only does he play a position that is historically almost impossible to make a big impact early, but he missed the first 9 games of the season. And that, like I said, it just has to be taken into account.
Yeah. Now I'm looking at even more, like Travis Kelce didn't have his first 1,000 yard season until his fourth year of his career. Sternberger is a guy I think that surprised all of us by with his tenacity in the run game and his pass protection, because that was not something we saw a lot of at Texas A&M. Another thing that I'll just briefly say about Jace as well is I think he needs an offseason. I think like you just said, I think most of those guys do. What's interesting to me about him, and we'll find out next year because I think we're going to see his development, but he looks small when he's out there. He doesn't look, he's listed at 6'4", 250, and that is not by any means small. Part of me wonders, does he look small because he moves like a wide receiver? And I think he kind of does. So that's kind of what I remember about Jermichael Finley as well. His first couple years in the NFL was, man, this guy moves like he's like number 88 is a wide receiver, you know, at number 87 moves. And I'm not saying he's Jordy Nelson, but he moves, you get those weird, like, oh, 87, like that 87 white guy out there. That looks like Jordy, but it's not, it's Jace. But he just moves so well. So I'm really excited about Sternberger. I'm really excited just because of what he showed, what he was able to show in the run game, and his blocking was really good. So I'm kind of in that fanboy club too. I'm going to be really optimistic about him moving forward. But am I going to say he's going to catch 100 balls and 1,200 yards next year? Probably not. Definitely not. But it's okay to be excited about guys. And I think he's one that showed us enough that I think we can have some excitement there. So moving on.
Right. And even then, it might not come next year. He might be a Packers Hall of Famer. He might catch 20 balls next season.
Yeah. And that's another guy you could talk about. We're not going to get too far off the beaten path here, but Robert Tonyan is another guy. He could be a guy that blows up next year. Maybe not, but like a guy that's still developing, because like you said, that is a position. It just takes time. Another guy is Mike Gesicki, was a freak of an athlete coming out of Penn State and was just garbage for a long time in Miami. And then the last 6 weeks of this season, you start to see it come together. And it's such a hard position to play. You're essentially playing three positions. And I mean, you got to be a really smart, really athletic. I mean, there's just so many things that go into being a good tight end in this league. So give those guys time. And that's honestly, I think there's a case to be made about why those first round guys don't don't hit as there's a big bust rate for tight ends in the first round, let's just say. And I think part of that is because of expectations and people are not patient enough with them, because that is a very difficult position. But moving on to Jay Sternberger's teammate out of Texas A&M, Kingsley Keke, round 5, 150th overall. Stats, he played 117 snaps, 9 tackles, 1 quarterback hit. Give me your brief rookie season impressions from Mr. Kingsley.
I think you got to be excited. What he was able to, so, you know, defensive line is the same way. Kenny Clark was such a rarity, but even he's a different monster in year 3-4 than he was in year 1. You saw BJ Raji take a massive year 2 leap. You've seen it up and down with guys, even Cullen Jenkins, his rise, if you will, is one of the top defensive linemen in a 3-4 in the league.
European Football League.
It takes time. And so what you're looking for in year 1 is the juice. Does it exist? Can you find it? Can you see it? And he's got it. Kingsley's got the juice. I'm not saying, you know, that we're going to see Geno Atkins from him. I'm not saying that we're going to see, you know, a Chris Jones from him, but I think he can be, if you're going to continue to run a 3-4 or whatever, I think he can be in your best 5. I think he can be in your best 5 defensive linemen, maybe even your best 4 defensive linemen. And I don't mean like on a roster. I mean on a good defensive line, you know, on a good defensive tackle rotation, a team like that, you know, a situation where you really can win games because of what you're doing up front. I think ideally you would want a couple of guys from a talent level, from a skill level standpoint, in between him and Kenny Clark on your pecking order, if you will. And, you know, that's important. And I just think he's got it. He'll get there.
Yeah. And I remember him at the Senior Bowl last year was kind of a guy that showed up and he had shed some weight. Really surprised people with just, you know, how slippery he was. He's just kind of one of those guys. It's hard to keep your hands on him because he does. He's got those quick steps. And I thought he was a very nice pick in the 5th round. And we're talking day 3 pick. We're talking some guys don't even think the 5th round is part of the draft. So Keke is a guy that I think, like you said, I'm excited about him. I think it's okay to have some excitement about him because I think he could develop into a really nice role player. And, you know, in a perfect world, he develops into the guy that you can line up across from Kenny. But even if he doesn't do that, I think you got a really nice developmental prospect there in Kingsley Keke. Moving on to the 6th round, 185th overall, Kadar Holman, cornerback out of Toledo, played 37 snaps and did not register a stat from either the line of scrimmage or from special teams. So I think you're probably going to be digging deep into what maybe you saw in the preseason from Kadar Holman. Ross, what are your thoughts on him?
Seemed like a press man corner. Seemed like, to me, a guy, in my opinion, like an Al Harris, you know, where I don't know at any point in Al's career if he was a good special teamer. And you do want that from your reserve defensive backs, but some guys are just good at defense. And I think Kadar Holman's one trick might be a super valuable one, and that's that he can play outside press man.
Yeah, and I think with Holman too, what's really nice about him is he didn't have to play this year. You know, in years past, you see these guys, these late-round picks, these UDFAs, that after the Packers' secondary group was just decimated, you're playing a guy like him in the NFC Championship game. So I think for Holman, it's good for him that he was able to not really have to play this year. And hopefully he can get his feet under him a little bit better now with the year in the NFL and come in next year and challenge for some playing time. That's, I think, what you would expect from a 6th-round pick is, you know, he will be on the bubble again next year because there's going to be another influx of talent that's going to come in. He's going to have to win his job again next year. But with a year under his belt, hopefully he can come in and compete for a spot. and be a contributor on defense. That would be, I think, what you would hope from him. Next pick, the second round or sixth round pick that they had in this draft was the 194th overall pick, Dexter Williams, the running back out of Notre Dame. He played 48 snaps, 5 carries, 11 yards, average of 2.2. Ross, thoughts on Dexter Williams?
I really liked his college tape. Coach LaFleur was not thrilled and made that clear on a number of occasions. It showed in his, you know, complete lack of involvement with the offense. They went out and got Ty Urban for completely different reasons. But he was certainly given a shot at being part of the offense way before they were going to consider Dexter Williams.
Trey Carson in that same vein. You know, they could have brought Dexter up instead. They brought Trey Carson up from the practice squad. So.
And I'm not going to stress about it too much. I would, you know, maybe add another back in this draft if you like the Moss kid or some of these third round, fourth round, fifth round kids, and have them come in and compete. I don't think you're going to see both Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams extended, re-signed, whatever you want to call it. In general, though, I would just say that it's an incomplete grade. It's an I. We don't know. We know nothing.
Yeah. The only thing for Dex is he was one of those like rare day three guys that people were pretty excited about. You know, his fit in this offense. People thought it was kind of one of those deals like match made in heaven. This is a six round guy that if he gets a shot, he could really produce in this Matt LaFleur offense. But as you said, Coach LaFleur did not have any issues with lighting his ass up during open portions of practice this summer. So he's an interesting one. You know, like you said, if he hits, great. If not, whatever. You should probably be taking a running back around this time every year anyways. That's kind of just how the modern NFL is. You're always looking to churn those guys out. So if Dexter can figure it out and be a contributor, great for him, great for the Packers. If not, I'm sure they'll have another Dexter Williams-ish type guy in camp this year. Last pick of this draft was the 226th overall, seventh round, Ty Summers, linebacker, TCU. Ty played 350 snaps with 4 tackles. He was on all 4 special teams coverage units. So what are your thoughts on the 226th overall pick?
Give him a shot. Has every athletic gift in the world. My opinion on the linebacker position doesn't probably jive, if you will, with a lot of folks around the Packers and around their fans. You know, people that have been clamoring for a linebacker. I don't think they matter, frankly. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl with 2 Cowboy cast-offs, you know, guys that literally weren't good enough for Dallas to keep them around. I just don't care about linebacker play. I think you can have just about anybody do it, and Ty Summers is just about anybody. I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility that he's able to do all the things that Martinez did well. And if he can't, hold up in coverage, well, frankly, neither could Blake. And so they might have to have OB do that, or they might have to find, you know, another coverage linebacker, like a Corey Littleton in free agency, or a Sternad in the draft, who's a really good coverage linebacker. I just think with Ty Summers, if you gave him the Jake Ryan role and said, "Hey, buddy, go nuts," I think he could do it. I think he would be. It would not be a noticeable difference.
Here's a question for you: what is the narrative on Ty Summers if he didn't miss 45% of the tackles he attempted this preseason? Because the dude still led the team in tackles by a mile.
Oh, you mean in preseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something that you can usually clean up. missed tackles are kind of like drops in that way. You can usually clean them up. Some guys just can't tackle, you know. But I think it's a lot different because, you know what? Both him and Curtis Bolton were really good in the preseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Curtis Bolton's still under contract for the Packers. You know, I think, though, if Ty Summers makes those tackles, he makes all the plays that he kind of left on the field this preseason, I honestly think Packers fans probably would have been clamoring for him to play this year. Same with Curtis Bolton if he doesn't get hurt. My last question, I guess this is kind of off topic, but Packers go into next year, they do nothing at inside linebacker. Blake Martinez walks. They go into the season with their top three inside linebackers as Oren Burks, Ty Summers, and Curtis Bolton. You, Ross Uglum, feel how?
Fine. Don't care.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I want an inside linebacker. Just maybe it's maybe a group think starting to get into my brain. I wouldn't mind taking one early, but at the same time, in the same breath, I think I could let you talk me into that pretty easily.
Oh, God. Give me another corner. Give me another defensive lineman. Give me another pass rusher. Give me another tackle. You know, give me another something that matters, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about draft stuff in the coming weeks because we are out of time today. We have talked for a long time about this. But guys, make sure you're if you like this content, if you want to get some of the best Packers draft content that is out there. And heck, if you're still listening to us right now, I probably got you on the hook. So make sure you head over to PackerReport.com where you can get a lot of that stuff. Some really great content that the team over there is producing. Give it a shot. I think you'll really, really like it. But Ross and I are done for the day. And we'll be back on here in a couple Tuesdays, I guess. And until then, go Pack, go. We'll be right back.